BBC World Service. And now, assignment. Simon Dring returns to Eritrea 6 years after independence as the country, one of the smallest and poorest in Africa, prepares for the future with confidence.
The Red Sea port of Massawa sweltered in the midday heat. Nothing moved. Offshore, the huge grey bulk of the Russian battleships lay silently at anchor. It was 2 days before Christmas 1977, when the fighters of the EPLF, the Eritrean People's Liberation Front, in shorts and plastic sandals, clutching Kalashnikovs and grenades, rose up out of their trenches to attack one of Ethiopia's biggest military garrisons, a base defended by tanks, artillery, and Soviet naval and air power. It was an act of extraordinary daring.
The attack started at 2:16. Then they'd started going over the top, hundreds at a time, swarming over, saying nothing, just climbing steadily over the emplacements. Climbing steadily over the emplacements that have been dug around the Ethiopian naval base and just charging. You're okay, just be careful. Now the Eritreans are calling in their reserve forces. Hundreds more streaming over the defences. Showered with dirt there by a bomb that... Now the first of the wounded fighters are coming back into the trenches. Bring him down here. He's safer here. Put him here. The front of his tunic stained in blood. His grenades unused.
They wrote a song about that day, when so many others fell back into the crumbling sands of those trenches. Some 600 were killed or wounded in the battle. Wadi Bashai nearly died too, shot through the face as he ran towards the Ethiopian lines. After 3 months with the EPLF, I found it hard not to be inspired by the selfless courage and commitment of these young men and women.
So many of my friends, of my colleagues, when they were dying, sometimes they get their stomach, I mean their intestines outside, you see, their stomach. But they will not cry and they will not remember their mother. Maybe if he has got children, he will not remember his children. When they were dying, they will encourage us to continue this struggle, not retreat back.
More than 65,000 fighters paid that price for their country. And at the stroke of midnight on May 23rd, everybody in Eritrea dances in their honor. They're shoulder to shoulder in the tree-lined streets of the capital, Asmara, a huge, foot-shuffling, swaying throng. It took 30 years before the 3.5 million people of this country had their first taste of freedom. And after 6 years of independence, their passion for celebrating that moment is undiminished.
We are proud as Eritreans. We are proud. And we feel these conditions will continue forever. Our children will continue this.
It is in the memory of that war and those who fought it that Eritrea is now trying to build its future. After 30 years of hiding from air raids and attacks, living in an isolated world of underground bunkers and caves, the taste of victory must still be wonderfully sweet. Esaias Afewerki was 17 when he ran away from home and went to war. He's now 51, the president of Eritrea, and of course, out on the streets, in a grey knit cardigan, dancing like everybody else.
Esaias, did you ever imagine this night?
Never. Not for one moment?
No. I can't tell you a lie. It's one thing to dream and something else to realize. It's impossible.
Esaias and the other leaders of the EPLF had a long time to think about the end of their war, to imagine how, against all the odds, they might one day govern an independent Eritrea. But the reality was more to do with day-to-day survival than any long-term goals.
Yes, we were talking about independence, but the problem in the mind of everyone was we don't have the resources. We can't possibly achieve what we dream. And to achieve what we are dreaming, we need certain things to be fulfilled. And trying to fulfill that is the challenge. No one has a clear idea on how that will be, but let's work hard, let's be more professional, let's create resources and mobilize resources. It's that kind of drive that ultimately realizes your dream. And then we began devising an environment. No one had this vision about continuing the armed struggle by having hospitals, schools, trains, underground. I never could have imagined that. But it came spontaneously, and it came as a way of surviving and challenging the Ethiopian forces. Even now, when you talk about Eritrea as a nation, I can imagine, because it's my wish, I would like to see every home comfortable, having a fridge, a TV set, a clean water, good schools, traveling not only inside Eritrea but going abroad. But how can you realize that kind of thing? It's not true. It's you work hard to make it true, and that's what I am saying to our people. Independence, yes, but it's not only the flag, it's not sovereignty, it's not being a member of the United Nations, but we seriously have to work to make Eritrea prosper and change the lifestyle of every home.
It was hard work and an extraordinary degree of self-reliance that won the Eritreans their independence. This scrap market is the perfect example of that spirit. Want to buy a tray hammered out of a Russian ammunition box or a table forged from an old Fiat car bonnet? Then this warren of ramshackle wooden stores and workshops is where to come. A place where any old tank or tin pot is turned into anything that might sell or be useful.
This is a market where you can find any kind of materials, old materials.
So basically they get anything, wood, tin,
anything.
Any old material,
yeah,
and they make something from it.
Out of it, yeah. These are crosses for the cemetery. When somebody dies, they come and buy from here. Or other, you see, there is a name also there.
This kind of effort is also about the drive to find a way forward, to make ends meet and create jobs where for much of the last few years there's been none. And it's about money. Song of Independence Week this year is Nakfa, not only the name of one of the most fought over towns in Eritrea, but also of the country's new currency, to be launched later this year. Typically, the front is rarely in a hurry to do anything. It's been the pattern over 30 years. Teach yourself what you need to know to win a war, and now to run a country. It has not been easy. Waldy, Andy Michael, is a fighter holding down a desk job at the Foreign Ministry. And Tekie Bieni, a man I last saw 20 years ago running the supply lines to the front, is now governor of the National Bank.
To win a battle is very easy, but now to achieve economic and social growth for the nation is very difficult, and particularly for Eritrea that has been damaged by 30 years of war, where we have lost all our infrastructure, all our economic basis, the industries and agriculture has been totally shattered. To to build on this and to achieve national development is quite a big problem.
What the government decided was no fighter is going to have a salary at all because there is no money. Until very recently, we don't have any salary. We are living on allowances, starting from the president down to the simple fighter. The struggle goes on. Barehanded, things are moving because there is commitment from the government side and tolerance from the people's side. So life goes on. We have no other choice. And remembering the 30 years war we had, which we fought single-handedly and won single-handedly, if the government and the people tighten our belts and say to ourselves, we can also build the country single-handedly. It's a conviction based on unity. Then everything is simple. This is what I believe.
Thought, time, care and commitment. The EPLF has taken that same approach to writing the country's first constitution. The National Assembly in Asmara is packed this morning. More than 500 people, men and women, from all nine of Eritrea's ethnic groups, representing every region. It's been a three-year process of consultation, and this is the final debate before the Constitution's ratification. Zemret was a teenager when he joined the front, devouring Dostoevsky and Dickens between battles. He's now a senior official at the People's Front for Democracy and Justice, the EPLF, born again as a political party. He's also one of the principal architects of the Constitution.
We must not exaggerate the role of a constitution in the process of nation building. The constitution is not a panacea. It's a legal document, a political document. It will articulate the national vision. It can be a means towards creating a stable political system, but it's only a document. The process of drafting the constitution was seen as an educative and participative process. We wanted to make it meaningful as part of the overall process of nation building. I think this self-reliant and independent attitude was one of the best traditions of the struggle. What I don't understand is the Western infatuation with democracy at this period. I'm personally against the new dogma of multipartism, of elections and so on and so forth. This is creating fetish out of these procedures and these principles. In Africa, we have not seen any problem being solved by elections. And we have been insisting in our conception of democracy that it must be homegrown, and that it must reflect the realities of our society.
Dust swirls around the kids running in the wake of this carnival float, an army truck heavily disguised as an Eritrean gunboat. It's a magnet for an ever-growing crowd of young people, and of course the EPLF deals with the realities of the language differences by ensuring that all the announcements about tonight's free concert are in the relevant Eritrean dialects. Asias is convinced that central to the effort being made to reconstruct the country is the mobilization of young people. At independence, the EPLF found an urban youth demoralized and corrupted by life behind the Ethiopian lines. School work camps and compulsory national service for everyone over 18 have now been introduced.
What do you do with the young people? They're very adventurous. They want to have everything available, fashion. I want to have the best of clothes. I want to be elegant. I want to travel, go outside this country. But where do I get the money for that? And how can the nation afford to live like that? That is what people are trying to communicate to the young generation. And it's quite a daunting responsibility, in my opinion.
But what do you focus them on? How do you get them to believe in that future?
It's very dangerous to go against the tide. And you have to be realistic about telling people what is possible and what's not possible. That's been one of the challenges.
Yes, we have the understanding or the insight that the national program is going to deliver at the end of the day. But how do you motivate people? What exactly do you tell them about the future and their responsibility? I mean, what should be the content of the education you give to these people? No one has come with a conclusion on this issue. It's a matter of trial. And the fact that there is no fighting is a missing element in the whole situation. You cannot recreate the hardship, the tension, and its impact on your attitude and your personality is quite remarkable. Recreating that is impossible. Now, the National Service is going to rebuild those strengths. It's not a way of telling them, live like what we've used to live like in the past, but still have some sense and responsibility. It might not be politics, but my attitude is, it's always good to live. People learn things the hard way.
Morning and evening, outside every school and government office in the country, the national anthem is sung. The flag raised or lowered. Drivers stop their cars. Pedestrians stand to attention. Shopkeepers come out onto the streets. Pride in country and civic duty has become the backbone to the new school curriculum, which accepts that the language of instruction is English. For the 1,200 pupils and 70 teachers of the Red Sea Comprehensive in Asmara, it's a very different world from what it used to be under the Ethiopian flag. Tekle Behe is one of the school's directors.
We were not able to express and teach in class or outside of class, even on the street, about our customs, our cultural heritage, about language, about the movement struggle against the regime. We were not able to talk about that. And we are highly controlled, you know. So nowadays, you know, we are teaching our kids from our own heritage, our own culture, our own sentiment, our own belief and understanding.
The corridors here, long, dark and noisy, are much the same as schools the world over. And the classes too. For these 13 and 14-year-olds, history is about remembering all those dates and reciting words on cue. But the new Eritrean curriculum is also designed to inspire the children to learn from and build on the stories of the past.
Open your history exercise books, please. Now, what do you know about the Eritrean struggle? Okay, the struggle was for 30 years for independence. So we say we call the longest struggle where?
In Africa,
we say. The longest struggle in Africa.
There's a lot of hand-waving in response to nearly every question, the children leaning forward to catch teacher's eye. And mine too, when it came to my turn.
When you think about the future, what will be your commitment? What will you do as young people?
We'll try with all our forces to build Eritrea, to get at the highest point with developed countries. So when I finish my school, I will work hard work. I will try to work hardly to build my country. I will try to discover something. That means, for example, Alexander Graham Bell has discovered a telephone. The same that I want to discover something and to be better my country.
The EPLF spent many years during the war developing and experimenting with different types of curricula, first in the underground schools among the children of the fighters, then in the towns and villages as they were captured. The front even smuggled in teachers from Europe to take part in seminars behind the lines. Tesfai Michael is director of National Curriculum.
The whole strategy was based on how could we lay the foundation for bringing the new generation. So one of the things that we thought would be very important would be to focus on the political and ideological upbringing of the young generation. At least we want to develop nationalism, patriotism, and the overall integration of moral and civic studies and responsibilities in the national curriculum.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, from grade 1 to 7, our intention is that children will develop love and respect to their elders, love and respect to their teachers and their studies, love and respect to their community, love and respect to their nation as a whole. And we also wanted to inculcate through this moral education good work habits, good work inclinations. And so if a child could be involved in some community activities, like trying to do some sanitation works as part of his extracurricular activities in the school, that would have an important impact in trying to inculcate in this young child his respect to the community, his respect to work, his respect to human betterment, which are very important moral standards. It's only if we invest in this young generation, whatever we could do, that we could maintain the national unity of the country, the identity of the people, and a constructive role in building the nation.
Reconstruction and the building of the new nation is a constant theme during this year's Independence Day celebrations. But it's not just the young people and the population of the towns and cities that concern the EPLF. Esaias admits it's been hard for the fighters to deal with the routine of government. It's just not the same as meeting the challenge of survival and war.
The problem of adjusting to new realities when you've grown up in a cashless society, with this distorted attitude about living in a healthy society or a normal society like what we have today, it's very difficult. The same thing, 8 hours, 10 hours. I mean, because the challenges of those days are not there, you cannot motivate or force someone to work 8 hours. It's logical because there is nothing to do. It's sitting idle in the office. It's very boring for everyone. It's not the same thing there. What do you do these days in my office? I mean, my office, I stay, say, from early in the morning up until 6 or 7 in the evening. I go at home and do something. But I don't find that very exciting. I don't think I'm very productive. This hangover of being used to always face the challenge and sometimes go beyond limits and have extended work hours. I remember sometimes I stay for more than 72 hours without sleeping. Now that kind of thing is not there. It's boring. I mean, I'm not doing anything. Sitting in this office, going around doing that. And
maybe you should make it look like a cave or something.
No, but you can imagine. I mean, we are human beings after all. And the problem is, how can we make these productive people be productive again? How can we recreate a situation which will provoke in every person to be as productive as he should? It's not an easy task.
The government had a party to mark the ratification of the constitution, another step forward in what Esaias calls Eritrea's homegrown future. But economically, how viable is that future, especially without the assistance needed to develop the country's resources? When it comes to foreign aid, the EPLF does not like to be pushed around.
We have learned a lot. Government agencies or NGOs will come and tell you, there is a conditionality. If you want aid, do this and that. There is a package of policy reform programs. There are these fashionable stereotypes. Democracy, human rights, broad-based governments, multi-partyism.
These are some of the issues that are put as conditionalities. How can you impose this on me because I'm poor, because I don't have oil, because I don't have the resources? It's not a rejection of democratic values, traditions, but this is political corruption coming at a very critical moment when you are helpless. I can live on aid for 10 years. In those 10 or 5 years, I will develop an attitude. I'm not developing any capability. I'm not developing any resources. And that's going to be lost time. Now with the introduction of programs, we have proved that we can live a better life by being productive on our own rather than living on handouts. And I think that's why we have been able to make our economy sustainable.
Science. Have a good night.
Oh, good night. I'll meet you on the street.
See you on the street.
Oh, sure.
You're a great dancer, I seem to remember.
No.
Eritrea is good news. A stable country full of energy and hope, where independence is more than just a flag up a pole. Poor maybe, but in a world where government is so often about corruption and mismanagement, Eritrea seems to be driven by a remarkable degree of honesty and conviction. If there's a catch in this story, it's whether or not the realities of Eritrea's survival means the EPLF will be drawn into playing the political game. But given the way they won their war, the odds are they might well have a chance of winning this one too.
Every year we find people are more and more committed, and the sense of purpose gets consolidated. It never ends. And someone was asking, you people dance and dance and dance and dance, there is no end for that kind of thing. I was here last year, I was here the year before, and people are doing it, and every year it's increasing. When people appreciate their achievements, they want to do more of that kind of thing. If we fail, yes, that would be very disappointing. But because we have not failed, it gives more energy and momentum for the future.
That edition of Assignment was compiled and presented by Simon Dring.